listening to Omnis Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnis. And returning to the show is Jamie, a.k.a. Sriracha Fim, the Hot Takes Master. Welcome back.
What's up, friend?
Well, I don't think we're going to have any super spicy hot takes this episode, so I don't know if all of my listeners are going to be disappointed.
I don't think you... I mean, we could throw in some spicy hot takes, but given what we're going to be talking about today, I think it'd be best to stay away from them.
Yeah, I don't think in this topic. So, listeners, what we're going to do for this episode is, for all of the new players and such that are not necessarily interested in buying every single model, or they at least need to stretch it out over a longer time period, kind of going to give our top five list of what we think are potentially the most impactful purchases that you can make. So you get the core set, and then where should you go from there? And we're going to try to pick what we think's, you know... We're going to try to pick what we think are the most useful and the ones that will fit into the most different and varied rosters. And so, well, I think we can probably just dive right in. And I want to say right at number one, man, Thor and Valkyrie are just spectacular. Like, it's hard to build rosters without them.
I think I'm pretty close to Valkyrie being the best character in the game right now.
I do not disagree with that.
Three threat, and she puts in so much work.
She really can fit into basically any roster, any team. She just fits in great. She's inexpensive. She's got six stamina for a three threat character. Yep. You can play her in a Wakanda strategy that's all about throwing and pushing people off points. You can put her in a damage dealing force like Cabal. There's no real direction she doesn't go. I'd say the only thing might be if you're building like a hyper durable team, like you're wanting to do kind of a Cap, Hulk, Iron Man, Ultron, or Black Dwarf or something like that. She might not fit into that, I suppose, but basically anywhere else.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you're going for an update on Pat's amazing Avengers, we don't really take damage list, then yeah, she doesn't really fit in, but, I mean, a lot of the time, especially when the game first came out, you know, everyone was looking at Zemo. Zemo did a lot of work. Zemo was the one that you always try to make room to fit in, and honestly, unless you need Zemo to hit that Cabal affiliation, Valkyrie just does it better. She's got the charge, she's got a ton of attacks from Black Fang, she's got a throw, which is incredibly important when it comes to this game. You know, the Asgardian, so power economy, big thing. Your power economy is better because she's gaining two every turn.
Yeah, a three threat character that's getting two power per round is significant in itself.
Yes.
But, man, Thor also fits in great. Like, he is not just an Avenger or an Asgardian. It's really easy to slot him into Cabal list. It's easy to slot him into Wakanda list. He's going to be a great guardian as well. Like, there's not much that Thor can't slot into. I think he's a little less impactful than Valkyrie overall because he does really want to be swinging his hammer, and he doesn't have a amplifier, you know, in the same way that like Warrior of Legend or MODOK's rerolls, that sort of thing. So he's not quite as consistent of a damage dealer, but he's also got the throw. He's also got the Asgardian bonus. He's a flyer. He's one of the better characters to actually play drop off on someone else. So he fits into a lot of designs.
Yeah. And the big thing about his throw is it's a size 4 throw. And so that gives us Thor, Hulk, and upcoming Black Dwarf are the only ones with size 4 throws. And as we're starting to see more size 4 characters, that becomes more of a thing. Like, you want to be able to throw MODOK out of the way. You want to be able to throw Black Dwarf out of the way, and these are the only characters that can really do it.
Yeah, definitely. And we can't forget that he's got a range 5, strength 5 hammer throw. that can also shock people and reduce their damage output. So he's really a versatile character where he can go up, be in the center of the board, smacking people around and throwing people off of the crisis, or he can hang back and be defensive for a little bit and play a support role for a turn or two. He really fits into just about any of these needs, and so he's just really common in a lot of rosters.
Yes, absolutely. Now, the five threat does make list building a little bit more interesting because he is a little bit more expensive. I'm not going to recommend you run him out there with a bunch of other five threat because then you'll be kind of low on the model count. But, you know, that's something to keep in mind. Like, he is an amazing character. He's absolutely great. The model is awesome. Absolutely love the model. But he is also five threat. So you kind of have to keep that in mind as you're building your roster to make sure you have enough lower threat people to make up that difference.
Yeah, and at the same time, it is important to keep in mind, you probably want a five threat character on your roster. There are probably just going to be some times in the team design where you want to have, you know, a Billy Badass and get a five threat out there. So, I mean, I'd stick one. And so right now you've got Thor or MODOK to think of, and then eventually you have Ebony Maw. And Ebony Maw is a very, very different beast in itself.
That he is. Also, brilliant sculpt. Absolutely love the sculpt.
Oh, yeah, his sculpt looks fantastic. I'm not as big of a fan of the card art as I am a lot of the card art, but can't win them all, right?
Yeah, true.
All right, so what's your number two pick? What's the number two most influential, impactful purchase for someone who has the core set?
I mean, really, as your resident Cabal fan, do you have to ask this? And obviously, I'm going to go with the big brain MODOK.
You were like, do you have to ask this? And I'm like, even with you saying that, I'm still not sure which character you're referring to.
No, it's MODOK. It's the big brain. It's the, if you spend any time on the Facebook groups, it's the character that gets asked, how do I solve for MODOK most often? And that right there tells you he's a very, very strong, very, very solid character. I mean, you have multiple attacks coming out of his Doomsday Chair. He has his, hey, I'm going to make you walk over here. He has a terrain throw. He has inbuilt defenses where your opponent, their wilds now count as blanks on attacks against him. So that's less damage coming into him. I mean, he's a big character. He's got 10 stamina on his front side. He does a lot, and there is an entire strategy centered around shoving MODOK into your opponent as quickly as possible.
Yeah, MODOK is a stellar pick, and it's not just for Cabal. He can really fit into just about any affiliation. I mean, he is a staple for Cabal, right? Like, it feels very much to the degree that a Cabal roster should probably have MODOK. In a lot of ways, he defines that affiliation to a certain degree, but you can definitely play him in Asgard, Avengers maybe not, but I still think there's probably some designs where you could do that as well. He fits into Guardians great. When we think about Wakanda, I don't think Wakanda is going to bring both Thor and MODOK in the same roster, but I could see them probably bringing one or the other.
Yes. I mean, granted, if you gave me the choice between Thor and MODOK in a Wakanda list, I would take Thor. I think Thor will benefit more from the Wakandan affiliation leadership as opposed to MODOK, because MODOK does have an inbuilt reroll. But there is an argument for bringing MODOK, because you do end up generating a lot of power with him. He is a very power-hungry character to begin with, but you can end up to the point where you have a little bit extra to do those rerolls to make him a little bit more efficient, a little bit more reliable if you really wanted to go that route. Like, there's nothing wrong with bringing MODOK in Wakanda, but if you were to give me the choice between MODOK and Thor, I would pick Thor.
Yeah, and I think Thor helps Wakanda round out its potential problems with playing into deadly meteors. and Thor is a really perfect character to accent that kind of plan. So he also, MODOK feels a little bit like what Wakanda already wants to do, and like you're taking it to the next level where you're like, I want a bunch of damage dealing like Killmonger, and I want a bunch of rerolls like Shuri and Black Panther, and it just, we're just gonna do more of the same and kind of overpower that direction. Whereas I think Thor kind of helps round them out by giving them a throw, giving them bonus power generation, and giving them a little bit better energy defense for deadly meteors, and someone who doesn't mind being in the center of the board as much.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think either direction, those are both very valuable picks for people. And MODOK is really fun to paint, too. I don't think that can go without being mentioned, especially if you're new to the hobbying side. I think working on MODOK can be very forgiving. It's a much larger surface area. Both him and Hulk kind of fall into this where they're just super fun to paint. And it can be a great way to just practice some of the different strategies and techniques and stuff, rather than starting on a really tiny model like Spider-Man or something.
Yeah, and the webbing on Spider-Man can be a bit of a pain. So MODOK is, he's a nice big model. Like you were saying, a lot of wide surface areas. And with a lot of new people to painting, new people to the hobby, faces tend to be like one of the biggest issues. And the nice thing about MODOK is he has this gigantic face. So you can practice painting a face on something significantly larger than all of the other models, and it'll help you like figure out how to do, you know, how to highlight cheekbones, how to highlight eyebrows and noses and the chin and stuff like that. So it is very, very good for that.
He's super easy to assemble too. One of the easier and smoother models to that just almost like magically just glues itself together.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so let's see. What do we want to pick for number three? We've already been talking about him a little bit, and so I've got to give a shout-out to the Black Panther and Killmonger pack. This was actually my original purchase. I had the core set on order, and I was like, well, I want to start painting something right now. So I went and picked up Black Panther and Killmonger, and I will say one of the other characters that is an argument for best character in the game is Black Panther. Holy crap, can that guy run in just about everything. Like, obviously, he's the leader of Wakanda, so if you're going to play Wakanda, you're going to play Black Panther. He's a fantastic Avenger. He's a fantastic Asgardian. I haven't played him as much in Guardians. I've played against him in Cabal a great number of times, and he's always frustrating. He's just, he's such a multi-threat piece that, and he's consistent. So he's one that you could play in just about anything. Again, he assembles really smoothly. He's very easy to paint. And once you get him, he's just, between his long movement, his rerolls for attacks, his above average durability, he's got a push on his attack so he can knock people off the crisis. He just fits into just about every strategy. Maybe not a hardcore Cabal like Kill Squad, but even then, I probably would still wouldn't mind having him in there.
Yeah, I mean, he's not terrible in a Kill Squad. Because he does give you a little bit of durability in that Kill Squad so that you can send him off on his own and sit him on an objective until you can get the rest of your squad around to deal with what's going on over there. So it's something to consider. Like, you could very easily just, in a very kill-focused Cabal list, take Black Panther, run Black Panther on his own up the side, because he's got that long move, he's going to get wherever you want him to go, have him sit on a secure objective by himself, and you are reasonably sure he's going to stick around there for a little while so that the rest of your kill squad can overwhelm and then slide over into that direction.
For sure. He also, if you're a player who really likes making super aggressive plays and likes to put your opponent in a position of like, hey, what are you going to do now? Black Panther is great for just immediately round one, running him to the other side of the board to like pick up an enemy crisis or something and just be like, come get me, bro. And see what happens, because one, he can probably live through it. Or two, even if you do daze him, he spends his power so well. He's like, oh, you dazed me. Guess what's happening to you next turn, buddy? Like,
yep.
I have all this power. You're about to get Panther wrecked.
Yep. Yeah, he's definitely a great character to think about.
But the Black Panther in Killmonger box has more than Black Panther in it.
Nope, it has one of the most OP cards in the game that also requires you to bring Killmonger, who is also an incredibly solid damage dealer. If you just want to throw a bunch of dice and knock your opponent's characters out, Killmonger does it, and he does it while laughing, and you do it while having a giant smile on your face, honestly.
I will say, as much as I love Killmonger, I will say he is primarily in Cabal and Wakanda. You're probably not going to play him in Avengers or Asgardians or even Guardians very often. I mean, you might occasionally find a spot for him, but he's super impactful in both Wakanda and Cabal. He fits in there really well, and he can be a really scary piece. And he's another one of those, if you like rolling dice and attacking models, having a MODOK and Killmonger on the same team is like, it's like a Rob Zombie movie. It's just murder. Just murder everywhere.
I mean, it is very fun. And the other main thing about Killmonger is usurp the throne. I mean, that's the thing, is it is a way to score 2 victory points outside of the regular mechanics of the game. And 2 victory points is a massive swing. It doesn't sound like it. Reading the card, it doesn't look like it, but when you're playing the game and you're all of a sudden up 2 victory points, that is huge.
And he's impactful enough that you get to do all sorts of cool things, like any of the cards or abilities that allow you to either activate again or get extra movement. All of those things are super scary on Killmonger. And so if you like that kind of like focused engine of destruction where you're like, all right, I'm going to bring this so I can move Killmonger further, and I'm going to do this so that he hits more accurately. Like, he really likes all of those things, and it can be absolutely beneficial. So if you want that like assassination run style feeling, Killmonger fits into that really well, probably more so than any other character in the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The focus on the kill, giving you 2 additional dice on your second attack. You know, you could do fun stuff like Black Ops Strike to then teleport and then charge out for a second strike on a different character. Like, he's a medium move, but he teleports around the table like a madman.
Yeah, you know, now that we're talking about it, I could totally see 17 threat roster: Captain America, Hulk, Agent Widow from the new Hawkeye and Widow box, and Killmonger in Avengers, because then you could gamma launch Killmonger even as early as turn 1.
Yeah.
And he can charge on turn 1 because he's an Avenger.
Yeah.
And that synergizing with Black Widow and interrogating people, like, yeah, Killmonger, you go murder this guy or like knock him unconscious and then I'll interrogate him.
Yeah, and as soon as you knock him unconscious, he gets a kill count token, so now he gets rerolls.
Yeah, it's a very, very strange Avengers list, but I think that could be super fun. We need that Widow to come out.
I dig it.
I think I can get behind this. All right, but yeah, Black Panther and Killmonger, it's essentially the third sort of expansion to come out, because it came out after Hulk and MODOK, but they're super valuable. And I think if you're trying to learn the game and get a feel for pieces, it is a super safe bet to just start with Black Panther. I don't even care what affiliation you're playing. You're just like, I want to get a feel for how this game works. Play Black Panther. He is like everything fun about Marvel Crisis Protocol. He's fast. He's durable. He's got control tricks. He's got damage output tricks. You're never going to have a game where Black Panther doesn't do good things for you. And it can be different every game. And that's just fun and exciting and interesting to play.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, man. So what's your number 4 pick?
Number 4 is going to be one Eddie Brock, also known as Venom.
See, when you were talking about, you're like, well, as a Cabal player, there's just one character that really stands out to me as being amazing. I'm like, who are we talking about? Is it Venom? Is it MODOK? Where are you going with this?
No, it's the other one that's tied to another OP tactics card, and that's generally because a lot of people like the Ultron Venom drop-off tactic. Ultron, because he's a size 3 with flight, which means that he can carry Venom. You drop Venom off, Venom does a little bit of attacking, gains a little bit of power. Now we're opening up, because he's got that little bit of power, now so many snacks is on the board. So if anyone tries to go off to Venom, Venom can now so many snacks to hopefully wear off Venom to heal that back. And now you just have this really annoying, supposedly slow-moving character right up in your face that takes a lot to get rid of.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff can absolutely get frustrating. And it was funny, you were talking about OP tactics cards, and I'm like, oh, we're going to talk about Lethal Protector. Oh, no, we're talking about drop-off this time.
Oh, yeah. Drop-off, 100% OP.
Lethal Protector, his card that comes with him, like his specific tactics card, is also really good, where his ability to protect any of your other characters, where someone wants to go for a sweet double attack early on, and you've got Venom there to just go, no, now I'm going to take the attack, and I'm going to teleport forward. Both of these things set up Venom for some really crazy plays, and I mean, I'm a fan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's anti-Shuri tech. So if your opponent's playing Shuri and you know they're going to push an important character off an objective, well, now you Lethal Protector move Venom up there. Venom takes a hit, gets pushed back. You're still scoring that point. It's also anti-Usurp the Throne tech. You know, if you know Killmonger is going off to someone and he's going to go off and get that Usurp the Throne, ignore the first attack, Lethal Protector the second attack, now Killmonger is basically done. And he didn't get the Usurp off, and now you've just denied your opponent two VPs. And Venom's probably in a much better position because, again, it is a teleport. It's not an advance, you know, so you don't really have to worry about terrain. And you teleport within range one, so you can actually make it go a little bit further, and you can get quite a bit of distance out of it, depending on the size of the base of the person that you're lethal protecting to.
You know, I totally forgot about this, and I'm going to, like, back up a step, because I forgot to mention, while we were talking about Thor and Valkyrie, the Hammers Crisis that comes with Thor is so much fun! And it is such a dynamic extract. I meant to mention that earlier in the show. Who knows? Maybe I'll just edit it into the beginning and nobody will know. By the way, if you guys heard that joke, we actually like recorded this like a half an hour into the show and I just stuck it into that spot. So you're welcome.
I mean, Hammers is great. Hammers is definitely one of those, do you want to throw a bunch of dice around the table? Pick Hammers. Hammers is the one that's going to let you throw a bunch of dice.
Yeah, and it's just such an impactful extract that it starts making the decision between whether you choose secure or extract really important and makes that a more significant decision. And so that's just super fun. But let's get back to Mr. Eddie, because this character, I think when people look at the card, there's a lot of people that just think he's just too slow. And traditionally, in a lot of skirmish games, sometimes slow, bulky pieces just don't do enough, or they take too long to get there. Mm-hmm. And because you're either usually playing him with a drop-off strategy or with Lethal Protector, maybe both, but probably one or the other, he manipulates things on the board differently than your average big, slow beater would.
Yeah.
And he can absolutely use his web line to just pull people into him. And he is an above average survivability. He has solid damage output. He's got good, you know, table manipulation. Obviously, he can get blown up real quick by some strong energy attacks if you're not careful. But I've also had Vision double beam him and leave him on one health and then have him go, so many snacks, we are Venom, and just like eat somebody. And yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and that happens. I mean, I still fall back. The best use of Venom that I've ever seen was actually my game against you, Charles, at the Las Vegas Open this year.
What did I do?
Well, this was just one of the... I think this is just, like, a random game on Friday when, like, we were just getting to know each other when we were playing games. But you moved Venom up to contest a objective point. My character that was there, you threw them off the point. And then on... this was on Extremist consoles. And then on the other point, you... Clintar raged that character there towards you to get them off the point, so you scored yourself one and denied me two.
Yeah, yeah, I and have talked about this point. I forgot that that was against you.
Yeah, that was against me. Every time you bring it up, I'm like, that was against me.
I think it was. I think you were actually playing Hulk, if I recall, and I was like, man, I can't throw Hulk off that point. Because he's too big. And so then I'm like, okay, I'm going to move forward one. I'm going to throw this guy off of that point. Then I'm going to use Webline and pull Hulk off of that crisis and then move forward and land on the crisis and be like, points for Venom.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and that was like, that was the most impactful thing that I've seen Venom do. And you did not make a single attack.
I know. Listeners probably like, we've heard this story like 17 times. He's only got like 17 episodes. So.
It's a very important point. Like, it's something that as we're playing the game more and more, if you're looking to be a little bit more competitive, if you're looking to like up your win percentage, going from a I'm just going to roll a bunch of dice and make a bunch of attacks to what can I do to win the scenario, changing your mindset to that's what's going to help you up your gaming. That's what's going to help you become OP. You know, because that's what the game is.
You're stealing all of my taglines here, Jamie.
Yep. I've been listening to your pod for too long and I've been on too many episodes. So,
and this character is OP, and this character is OP, and that tactics card is OP. I'm this protocol for everyone.
But that's the thing, like, yes, you can win the game by KOing every single one of your opponent's characters.
I did that once at LVO. I have done it once.
Yeah? Yeah. Out of how many games have you played?
A lot.
Yeah. Whereas your most likely way of winning is to score 16 VP before your opponent can. So as soon as you get into the mindset of what can I do to score the most number of VPs in this turn while denying my opponent the most number of VPs, if you're looking to up your win percentage and be slightly more competitive, that's the mindset that you need to swap to.
Yeah, and I can't disagree with you there. Even if you're playing a very kill-focused team, you have to be thinking about, well, I can only dump so much reroll magic into one direction. Where am I killing people and where am I throwing people?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
And sometimes you just need to unleash the cube and knock someone off of the crisis, you know?
Yep. Sometimes you need that attack to get that throw and go crazy about it.
But yeah, I think Venom, he works great in Cabal. He synergizes with the Ultron drop-off, so he's a fabulous fit there. He already fits into the existing Wakanda plan of being a very push and throw oriented team, and he doesn't mind getting up in the middle. He loves having the rerolls for his consistency. And he's an insanely good Avenger. When his webline costs one the first time he uses it, or the throw only costs two, that's so magical for him. And Cap can help protect him from energy attacks. There's lots of marvelous synergy there. If I do say it myself. I haven't played him in Asgard as much. What do you think about him in that affiliation?
So if your opponent's counterplaying Venom, obviously they're going to try and stun Venom as often as possible because you don't want him to gain that power so that he can then turn around and so many snags and we are Venom. You know, so being in Asgard does give him a way to get rid of status effects without having to give up actions, which is really nice. And, You know, honestly, more healing is not really that bad of a thing if you play him a lot more aggressively in Asgard. I think putting him in Asgard will actually let you play a slightly more aggressive Venom than you would normally, knowing that you have a little bit of backup healing, you know, you have a little bit of protection from status effects and, you know, that type of thing. So I actually think he wouldn't make that terrible of an Asgard.
Yeah, he definitely fits into their, like, already kind of existing tanky plan. And it does make it harder to, like, soften him up when you know he has access to an Asgardian heal. So definitely an interesting one there. I still think he probably slots into the original three slightly better, but he's absolutely a fun character that when you're looking for that last unaffiliated spot and you've got four threat, I don't think you're really ever going to be disappointed with Venom. He's just solid.
Yes, absolutely. Like, you will never get to a point, I honestly believe you will not be at a point where you'll look at your game and be like, man, I wish I didn't bring Venom. Most of the time, you're going to look at a game and be like, man, if I had brought Venom, I could have done this, I could have done this, I could have done this, and I could have done this. And again, talking about modeling, because we are looking at, like, you know, after you got the core set, what are your next purchases? Very simple model to put together. I mean, his hands are a little bit tricky, in which case I highly recommend getting some tweezers, stealing your significant other's tweezers, stealing your mother's tweezers, using those to put the model together.
As long as you don't steal my tweezers, I will fucking kill you. Don't mess with my tweezers or my needle nose pliers. I will hunt a mother down. No, I mean, honestly, I don't know why people complained about his hand that much. I love the fact that they cut a couple of pieces into smaller pieces to make it easier for them to not have shitty mold lines. And
yes, absolutely. The way they cut the model gave much better definition with the model itself, but it does mean that there are some points where you need to use a pair of tweezers, a pair of needle nose pliers, just to sit that piece in until the glue dries. But painting, it's an entire black suit with a white and a red tongue. Super easy to paint. Like, incredibly easy to paint. So for the whole modeling aspect, getting him built and put on the table, honestly, is not going to take you very long.
Yeah, he's a solid character, you know, and, you know, because you're just going out, you're just buying Venom, you know that everything that you're spending on that box is going to get used. And it's super easy to start slotting him into some rosters. So, yes. All right, so for number five, I'm going to give you guys a little foreshadowing, and this was the one spot where the Sriracha Fam and I couldn't quite settle in on what was our number five pick, and so we have separate ones. But
that we do.
Because it's my show, I'm going to go first. Fuck. I decided that I wanted the number five to be Vision and Winter Soldier. I think Winter Soldier helps round out a lot of list-building options, where because he can help you get to your affiliation bonus for every team, he has the potential to fit into any roster. And especially if you're playing with a partner or a best friend and you guys are sharing models, Winter Soldier can really ease some of that design where you're like, well, I want to try this, but this model's already used. Winter Soldier can really easily just help rounding out, you know, what you're going to play. You're like, oh, well, I needed another three threat, you know, because Avengers only had, you know, they have Iron Man, and that's the only three threat that they start off with. And so having access to another three threat for Avengers helps so many times. It can also help with Wakanda. Like, he just fits in a lot of places. He's a solid, I mean, I don't think he's quite as good of a character as the other ones we've mentioned on this show, but he's still a perfectly solid three threat character. I mean, since Valkyrie came out after him, I think the competition for that three threat spot goes up a lot with her.
But, yeah, it does.
But usually you're bringing him because you want to be able to bring something like Valkyrie and Venom or something into an already existing roster, and Winter Soldier is filling an affiliated spot. But
I mean, absolutely. The thing I do like most about Winter Soldier is he does help you round out that minimum number of affiliated characters to get that affiliation bonus, for sure. And, yeah. You know, stats-wise, he's not bad. He's got a range 5 attack. You know, his ice bend power to do an attack, you got to be up close and personal. But he does also have the got your back, which is, you know, it's kind of nice. Someone close by to him gets dazed or KO'd, you get a free attack out of there. You know, action economy, free actions are always going to be great.
Yeah, I'll say one of the other things I like about Winter Soldier is that he fills multiple roles. He can be that character that's just kind of a low threat investment that will sit back on a secure and just pop shots at people all game. And he can be fine there. But I think he actually works pretty well for some aggressive plays. Like, he's one of my preferred characters to go after, like, the center cube. Because when people start attacking him, he is really good at like, if he gets to Red Fury, some people, like, his spender attack is really nice. It really starts setting him up for some impressive plays for his threat level when he gets to, you know, he almost likes getting dazed. And it does kind of fit the character where if he gets punched down and then he's like, ow, that hurt. Now I'm going to just Red Fury you all over the place. That attack is really, really solid for a three threat character. And because he gets to make a rifle shot afterwards, he can often get some power back. And so I think he's an absolutely interesting character, and he often benefits more from the Spetsnaz training if he's right up there in the middle.
True. Very true. Very true.
But coming with him is Vision. And I know some people feel that Vision is primarily an Avenger, which I think is true to a certain extent, but he's another one of the flyers that really helps facilitating using drop-off. So I think you can slot him in anywhere. He's got solid health and overall stats for a four threat character. Him having access to a strike-like beam, he doesn't get power for every damage that he deals, but he's got sap power on it, and he gains at least one for each person he's attacking with it. And so just in general, he can get a lot of work done in a lot of places. He fits into Wakanda. Like, he loves access to Wakanda rerolls and yes. Shuri. He loves having his throw discounted in Avengers. He doesn't mind being the character that just walks up, you know, takes one step forward, picks up an extract or hangs out on a secure, and then uses synthesis to gain two extra power. So he's even more dangerous the next turn. I mean, there's just a lot of places that he can fit in. And sometimes you're just like, I need an energy attacker because my buddy Jamie is always playing Venom.
Yeah, for an energy attacker, I definitely like him a lot. If you're looking for if you bought the core set and Captain Marvel isn't quite your thing, but you know you really need an energy attacker, then Vision's definitely a very, very solid way to go.
Yep. And you get multiple really interesting tactics cards with them. Doesn't both tactical analysis and field dressing come in that pack?
Yes, I do believe so.
Yeah, so having a tactics card that can just give somebody a short movement and having a tactics card that can undaze someone, both are potentially very powerful and start expanding your strategies quite a bit. So I think their pack, while not the most significant, I still think it's really good and one that's worth buying on the, you know, in the first few or so.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's one of the harder ones to paint for me, though. I almost, like, I was so excited to play him, and then I, like, messed up my first paint job on him, and I was like, how do I fix this? And, you know, spoiler alert, I think I fixed him okay, and he looks fine. But I was a little worried at first. That was a strange character for me to paint.
Yeah.
Bucky was super easy, though.
He, with the way that the panels are on his suit, it does make it kind of weird. I have seen a bunch of really nice Venom visions where they do the all white suit.
I see those too.
Yeah, that one is actually really nice, and so that one's kind of easy to do as well. So undercoat with a white primer, then get yourself a gray wash. I believe GW has a gray wash. And get yourself the, I believe it's called Apothecary White.
I have it.
The Apothecary White contrast paint. Yep. And then really that's all you need to do. So you get the white, prime it in white, do the Apothecary White contrast paint over the top, give that one a couple hours to dry, go back with some white paint, do some dry brushing over the top, hit it up with that gray wash, which I don't remember the name of. I'm actually looking at my paints and I don't see it right now. And then once that wash is dry, just go back in with another white dry brush, a little bit higher up, not quite in the same areas that you dry brushed before, and there you go, done. All white vision, done. Probably took you about 30 minutes, plus another like 30 minutes or so waiting for the contrast and the wash to dry.
He is a really cool sculpt, just in general. I like seeing him on the table.
Yeah, the whole facing through the wall, that was a nice touch that AMG added.
Yep. So what was your pick for the fifth spot? I mean, even if it's wrong, I mean, I'm still curious what it was.
So my pick for the fifth spot includes the second best three threat character in the game, which is Shuri.
She is really good.
So I picked this one as opposed over Vision and Winter Soldier because from what I was saying earlier, where switching your mindset to what can I do to score the most victory points, playing Shuri is the fastest way to do that. Also, playing Shuri teaches you the power of a range 5 push. Oh my god, is that amazing. It is so good. It does mean that you tend to activate Shuri lost in the round, so you kind of telegraph that a little bit, but there is nothing like pushing a character off a secure that your opponent thought that they were safe at, or, and this is another LVO game for me, is playing Gamma Shelters, actually against a friend of mine here in town. He got his Hulk to the middle shelter, and because Shuri was nice and close, I was able to push Hulk away from the middle shelter twice. And I got Hulk all the way off into the corner to where it took him an entire turn to come right back in. He used both the Gamma Leap and 2 movement actions, and he did nothing else.
You know, I know this is not the first time that you're going to have had someone tell you this, but you're a bad person.
I felt so, because he's like one of my best friends. I felt so bad. I had to go buy him a drink afterwards.
Oh, I suppose that was forgiven. Was it like a really cheap beer or was it a nice beer?
No, we drank whiskey.
Oh, all is forgiven. All is forgiven. All right. I guess Jamie's not a trash person after all.
So you've got that range 5 push from Shuri. Absolutely amazing. I would include her just for that. And then the icing on the cake. Oh my god, how good is Upgrades?
Upgrades is amazing.
Upgrades is so good. I mean, the thing with any dice game is any sort of dice fixing. So additional dice, rerolls, blanks counts as successes, blocks counts as successes, hits counts as blocks, that type of thing is amazing. Because it helps you smooth out the variance in the character. You don't have so many, like, wildly spiky games where you do a bunch of, you know, you got a bunch of successes in one hit and then nothing in the other. It helps smooth that out. Now, most of the reroll tech that we have here in the game so far is the character making the attack has to then spend additional power for the reroll. And sometimes you get to the situation where you don't have that. In comes Shuri. Disney Princess Shuri. Because Shuri comes along and says, go ahead and reroll that dice, and I will pay for it using my own power. Oh my god. So nice. And especially if you bring Shuri and Cabal. Because when you're using her range push, you're guaranteed one power. You're generally doing one point of damage. So you're getting the second power from the Cabal leadership. Now you're just starting to chug on that power, and you're able to hand it out pretty frequently, and the Shuri and Okoye box comes with the advanced R&D tactics card, which is a
before you get to the tactics card, keep in mind, she can end up getting 3 power per shot, because if she rolls a skull, she gets a power as well.
Yep.
You're like, here, take 1 damage, I'll get 3 power, take 1 more damage, I'll get 3 more power, now I have 6 rerolls for Thor.
Yes, and you got rerolls going from Shuri, and then if at the end of it, you're like, man, I still have a bunch of extra power, one of the Texas cards in the box is advanced R&D, and you're like, well, Shuri's going to play advanced R&D, and I'm going to spread this power out to a bunch of other people who are now going to do more stuff. Like, I think in the early game, as you're making your initial purchases, she's going to be one of the ones that's going to have the most impact on the way you play the game.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. She is a really powerful character in specific secures. But as I've found that I've had to play into, say, like, Deadly Meteors more often and such now, she's not quite as cool there. And so she really, she did, she kind of, like, fed my mindset a really particular direction, or I was like, oh my god, if I can just play in, like, Gamma Shelters and, Serum all day long, Shuri's the goddess of all Marvel Crisis Protocol. But then you realize that not everyone's going to pick those Crisis every time. Then you're like, oh, okay, maybe Shuri's not broken. She's just really, really good. So from that perspective, you're going to hear a lot of players say that Shuri is in the conversation for the strongest character in the game. And they're not wrong.
No, not at all.
I think I'm personally at a point where I put Valkyrie and Black Panther above her. But if you have a meta, or if you have a plan and you're able to generally pick the secures and you can have her in Gamma Wave or Serum, she's really, really good. Really good.
Yeah, she's also really annoying in Wakandan Herbs. I like her quite a bit in Extremis consoles as well, because she can very easily stop your opponent from grabbing the middle console.
Yeah, she just doesn't often feel busted in Extremis console. She just feels solid, because you still, like, that's one where you can kind of manipulate what aspects of the board you're going to be playing on, and you can end up in situations where Shuri's just kind of out of position, and she kind of needs to stay back and hold her point, but she doesn't have someone to shoot, and it's not always perfect. And so something you got to, like, keep in mind and realize that your opponent can try to play around her a bit.
Absolutely. And so the other one that comes in the pack, because it's not just Shuri, it is also Okoye.
Oh, Okoye. She is my... can I just say, Okoye is probably my favorite MCU character. General Okoye. She is so badass. And also...
Absolutely.
Bald Squad, what up?
Bald Squad, Bald Squad reporting in. Absolutely. Yeah. So Okoye, I think, is great, because it gives you a 2-threat bodyguard. I mean, Cap as a bodyguard is absolutely amazing. No denying that there. But sometimes you just don't have 4-threat. Sometimes a 2-threat is better.
Well, let's be honest. Like, Cap, you're not really playing Cap outside of Avengers very much. He really does. He is really kind of designed to synergize with his affiliation bonus. And he often feels just kind of solid or okay outside of it. And Okoye can give you the ability to, like, say if you've got an opponent who's playing Killmonger a lot and you need to, like, stop the Assert the Throne plays and you need something to help you divide up damage a little bit better, Okoye is great for that.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing I like about her, because, you know, she's super easy to throw into a list. She can put out some damage if you get a bunch of power on her, because her Vibranium Spear Thrust does have Flurry on there. So, I mean, it's a potential 2 attacks on a wild. You know, she's a little bit survivable because she does have the Martial Artist ability within range 2, where she gets to add blanks to her defense dice. So if you get her up there, she can become a little bit more survivable than her stats make her out to be.
She does often deal a little bit more damage than Black Widow does, for example, in the same threat yep. level. Her spear blast, like, she's got a cost zero energy attack. It's only 4 damage, but she gets a power out of it, so it helps her set up to have the power to bodyguard. And I've seen people use drop-off on her, like, going after Venom and just having, like, Vision drop-off Okoye, get a free spear blast, she gains a power, then her next activation, she double blasts Venom, and that can take Venom down. And when you have yep. a 2 threat character take down a 4 threat character, that can be a pretty big deal. She's also got 3 energy defense, so she plays a little bit better into meteors than Black Widow necessarily does. Mm-hmm. And so, especially if you guys are sharing models and you've got, you know, a couple, or it's a father and a son, or a mother and a daughter, or whatever, you can absolutely, like, let one side have Widow and one side have Okoye, so that you both have the potential to play a 2 threat character, which can sometimes just help you with the math, depending on what your crisis is.
Yep, absolutely. So that was my pick for number 5.
It's fair. It's not an unreasonable pick. But so for all the listeners, obviously, there's a bunch of character packs that we did not mention, and we could, to a certain extent, tell you, buy them all. And it's not that we're saying that, like, Rocket and Groot aren't good, or Star-Lord isn't good, or Hulk isn't good. You know, you've got Gamora and Nebula on the horizon, Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. There's still a lot of other, like, really interesting packs, and you can pull them in. But this was try to be a gauge to help you if you're just trying to figure out, what should I prioritize picking? And all of the models are potentially useful, but some of the other ones that we didn't go over in detail are a little bit more focused to specific situations and are not necessarily going to have as immediate of an impact on you right out the gate.
Yes. But the other thing to remember is this is a hobby, so the rule of cool supersedes everything else. You know,
so you're saying is we should have put Rocket as number 1?
I mean, if we're going by rule of cool, then we're going by Thanos is number 1, even though he hasn't released yet. We have 0 ideas with rules, but goddamn, that model is amazing. But the thing with the rule of cool is, you know, we're giving you suggestions, we're giving you ideas, but if you like a model more than anything else, if you like a specific rule more than anything else, buy that one. You'll enjoy the hobby so much more by getting things that you like more than listening to 2 bald dudes talk on a podcast for 45 minutes, an hour, however long that we're doing.
Whoa. Let's not push things too far. Listening to bald dude podcasts is basically the greatest thing ever.
Yes. Bald dude podcasts definitely rank higher than non-bald dude podcasts for sure. But when you're looking to spend money, rule of cool, you know, if you think the Rocket model is the greatest model that AMG has ever come out, buy that.
So here's a question for you then. Since, I mean, Omnis Protocol is kind of the official bald guy podcast, even though Jay's bald on Recalibration Matrix and Sung Soo is bald across the Bifrost.
But Pat
isn't. Yeah, right, like, and Greg isn't. So, but if let's say, like, super hypothetical situation, if I could get Josh Brolin to come on the podcast, would he be kind of unofficially part of the bald guy club since he's the voice for Thanos, even though he himself is not bald?
Oh yeah, no, 100%, without a doubt, no question, a honorary bald guy club member for sure.
Makes sense. All right, so listeners, couple quick shout outs. First off, we are going to be doing a Patreon episode, which will release just a couple days after this one. I try not to shout out the Patreon stuff every single episode, but if you want to support me and help me with the projects, it's just $1 per episode. I release a bonus episode every week. Me and Jamie here, we are going to talk about how the crisis can split up your team and how to recognize that and how to factor that into your design. And so we're going to be doing a bonus episode about that topic. And one of the things that the Patreon has helped me fund is I'm now releasing some video content. So there's Omnis Protocol on YouTube. And so far, there's multiple videos already. They're just short, like 5 to 6 minute videos where I try to lay out some visuals for some different tactical options you can do with different characters. The first one was on Ultron, comes right out of the core set. And then second one was on Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. So those characters aren't fully released yet, but just to show you some tricks to maybe get you excited about them. And there's going to be more episodes coming down the line. And I appreciate all of the subscribes and comments. It's something I'm just trying to make every single one of those videos better than the last one. And obviously, I love doing the podcast, and that's not going to change because I get to talk with my bald bro Jamie over here, and we get to nerd out.
Yep. Yeah, we do.
And talk about how cool Okoye is because she's a sweet bald person too, and she's awesome.
Yep.
Well, who are the other bald characters that we have so far? We don't have Xavier yet. Kind of need an Xavier. He's true bald guy squad.
Thanos is the next one coming out that's bald. I don't think there are any others. Nebula. Nebula is a bald.
Ooh, yeah. She's definitely in the bald squad too.
Yep.
But man, Rocket's like the opposite of bald squad, so maybe I can't like him anymore.
Well, knowing your love for Guardians, I guess you have to go with Nebula then.
Yeah, probably. She's super awesome baldness.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for recording this episode with me. This has been super fun, and I think this will be really helpful for the listeners figuring out what they want to buy next.
Oh, no, you're absolutely welcome. As you know, I love getting 4 hours notice that we're recording a podcast to then talk about a pretty in-depth subject like you always do with me.
You had more than 4 hours this time. It was at least 6 or 7 hours.
And everyone, remember, you know, if you vehemently disagree with what we say, remember, email omnisprotocol@gmail.com. Omnis will reply to you personally, and we'll probably send you a signed photo of him because he loves you.
What am I getting nerd wrangled into? All right, well, since you're volunteering me for everything, why don't you end the podcast this time, Jamie?
Have a good night, everyone, and remember to be okay.